I am excited for this.
Me too.
I don't think I know. Oh,
I'm sorry.
Ahead.
If I just have you do that again, I think
yeah.
I said something.
No, you're fine.
Okay, and go.
So I'm really excited to be interviewing you and talking with you. It's a conversation. It's not an interrogation. It's a conversation. I don't know much about your story, but I know that we connected on it when we had lunch at Alon's months ago at this point. But if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself and, you know, just a quick background bio.
Sure. Yeah, so it's great to be here. Thank you for having me. I guess you know, but for anyone who's watching, Tanya Garcia, I have been, I guess, living in Atlanta for about 30 years almost, 29 to be exact. I have been, I think importantly for this podcast, divorced for 5 years now. I had been married for 16, so... I'm trying to do some math. Yeah, so technically divorced for four, called the end of the marriage a little bit over 5 years.
Yeah.
So I have one son here in Atlanta who is getting ready to go to college, which is mind-blowing, but obviously the most important part of my story. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for just being here. And let me ask. Your divorce is 5 years old, you know, it's kind of, I won't say well behind you, but it's behind you at this point. Why say yes to come and share this vulnerable chapter of your life?
Yeah, it's first of all, I don't think divorce is ever really in your heart and in your being, you know, at least for me, entirely behind me. And I think a lot of people I've spoken to feel similarly, right? It's, you move past it, but hopefully you're taking learnings from it and you're sort of letting it inform in helpful ways your future. So I think for me, that's a very important thing. But the question about why I agreed to come and talk about this very sort of vulnerable, painful part of your life, of my life, it's a really good question. And I hadn't, like, when you first initially told me about the podcast, I was like, sure, that's great. I love talking to Abby. It's fantastic. But really, when I delved into why I did agree to it, I think it comes back to the first part, which is you're never really entirely past it. You know, there's no matter how you feel, no matter what happened, it's such an impactful and traumatic thing, no matter what the circumstances are, that I think it's helpful for me to process it and perhaps have a conversation that I haven't had before about it to help inform my future path. So that's part of it. And I think the other part of it is no one plans on getting divorced. So, and it is incredibly painful even in the best of circumstances. So I think if what I have experienced and learned as a result can help anybody else or even just make anyone else feel like they're not alone and what they're going through, I'm all for it.
Yeah. I know that particularly for me was when I was in the muck of it, just having...
Can you hear that banging?
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like people walking, right?
Yeah.
I know when I was in the muck of it, being able to talk with friends, even new friends, like we didn't even know each other that well, but just having someone else who was on the other side of it to say it's going to be okay is extremely helpful. So thank you again for not backing out.
No, of course. No, I'm happy to talk about it at any time.
So let's maybe start from the beginning. How did you meet? What attracted you to each other?
Yeah. So my ex, it's a bit of an unusual situation, but my ex-husband was in a PhD program at Georgia Tech, and so was my sister. And my mother also worked at Georgia Tech, big Georgia Tech family. So my mother was very active with sort of helping students find scholarships and job opportunities and internships and all of that. And she, I don't remember exactly how she met my ex-husband, but she did meet him and helped him get a scholarship for a summer program. And then she introduced him and my sister because they were both at Tech getting their you know, studying. And they became quite good friends. I was already working. I was, you know, sort of in the thick of the corporate world, working like 90 hours a week. And so I knew him via my sister and interacted with him at times. He would come. My parents are always hosting people for dinner. Anybody. So he was there from time to time, and so that's how we met. And he and my sister became good friends. They did a lot of stuff together, and we hung out a few times as a result of that. And he was really he's very smart. He's very clever. He was just very refreshing to me because, as much as I've been in the corporate world my whole life, I'm probably not your traditional sort of. You know, it's not all about, I like to have fun, I like to have clever conversations, yeah. As do most people, I think. But we just had that. And I think there was a certain element of comfort and safety with the fact that he was a friend of my sister's, and I had some not great relationships, as is the case for most of us previously. So there was a certain element of just comfort that was very natural. So that's how we met. And it just sort of happened one night with a little too much alcohol. And
I'm going to be curious, how many stories have alcohol in them? Yeah. So when I interview
a lot of stories. A lot of stories. Yeah.
The great liquid courage.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. The great, yes. Yes. So it just kind of happened. And I was at a point in my life where I had always wanted to get married and have a big family and children and, you know, just do that. That was very much part of my DNA. And I was 31. All of my friends were married and were having babies and all of this stuff. And he was very expressive about his feelings for me. I felt very comfortable with him. We had a great time. So it was just kind of normal and easy, I would say. And I'll just, you know, go ahead and say this is probably a precursor to some other questions, but we started, it wasn't even really dating. It was just sort of, we were together. And he was finishing up his PhD. He had an opportunity to move to France for his postdoctorate. We started dating in March. We knew pretty quickly he was going to be moving to France, and he asked me if I would go, and I said, I'm not going without, if we're not, like, I'm not leaving everything I've built,
yeah.
Unless we're married. And so we got engaged in August, just 5 months after we started dating.
Oh.
And then we married in December.
Oh, wow.
So we got engaged in August. He was in France. I was here. So we were separated, and then we got married in December. And then I moved to France, and we were there for 2 years. So it was a very, very, very quick, like,
courtship.
Yes.
I guess.
Yes. There wasn't even really courtship. It was just, we're together. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds like he won some points because he was comfortable, easy, clever, credible. He won a lot of points.
Yes. And yes, absolutely. Mm.
So describe the family dynamic.
Yeah.
The family and marriage dynamic.
Like my family with him with my family.
I guess, you know, you two as a unit, kind of now as a married unit, and then when kids entered the picture, just kind of what that landscape evolved into.
So, like I said, we spent the first 2 years of our married life in France, away from, you know, all family, yeah. all friends, everything, in a very, in, you know, sort of concentrated time together where it was just us. And it was, there were cracks pretty early on, which I know is the case for some people, not the case for everyone, but, you know, what I expected to be this sort of romantic, oh, now we're in Paris together and I've left everything for you and here I am, and didn't really happen. And I think in retrospect, I know we are so different. And so, you know, what is important, deeply important to each of us within a relationship is very different. Mm-hmm. And that was apparent to me very, very quickly. And I remember having some of those initial, I would say, misgivings that were, I did not know how to process. But I would even send my mom and my sister these messages saying, you know, I think I made a mistake. This does not feel right. But being very stubborn as I am about the fact that this was going to work, it had to work.
Okay. So there was a veil of, you had given up so much, everything, your entire life.
Yes.
Pretty much.
Yes.
To make this move and transition.
Yes.
So
it had
like, there's no plan B.
No.
This is the only plan.
Now, of course, now I know, like, there's always a way you figure out the plan B, but at the time, it was just, no. Like, I could not wrap my head around it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So take us through then kind of what happened as, you know, the idea of divorce maybe started to, you know, maybe it wasn't like blinding headlights from a semi-truck. Maybe it was a little more subtle, but yeah. But take us through that process of where that realization came.
Yeah, so, you know, there were absolutely times in those first couple of years where I was sort of like, you know, sort of smacked with the reality that this was not what I expected. But I could not, as you said, wrap my head around the plan B. And so, you know, we moved back to the U.S. We moved back to Atlanta, where my family is. So that was in 2005. And then, again, there were more and more sort of cuts, right? And it's I refer to them as cuts because, you know, the adage death by a thousand cuts really applies. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to just dismiss one or another, but then the you know, over time, that cumulative effect is pretty significant. So we moved back. I at the time was 34. I really, as I mentioned, desperately wanted kids, and that became a point of contention for us. But I did end up getting pregnant, and I'll say this, you know, we ended up in therapy almost as soon as we got back, which was scary because, again, you know, my parents had been together forever, his parents had been together forever, and in my mind it was, we're a union if we already need therapy.
So that's why it was scary. It's like, shouldn't we still be in the honeymoon phase?
Correct. Absolutely. Okay. Now, I'll also say, I think it's very healthy if you're struggling with things to go to therapy and try to fix them. So then a year later, I got pregnant. And it was a very scary, anxious, again, one of those, this is not going the way I expected it to go. Mm-hmm. I was scared because it's a scary big thing. He was angry and scared in a way that I didn't expect. So I think that was something we had to work past, and we did. And then we had our son, and that was a whole other stress. He was born early. It was, you know, it was really, there was a tremendous amount of stress that came into our marriage consistently. And what became clear was that the ways we handled stress were so different from each other. And the ways we dealt with sort of the everyday stresses of being an adult mm-hmm. were so different.
Can you give us an example of how you guys were different?
In terms of stress management?
Yeah.
So I am, as I mentioned, very stubborn, and I'm sort of and I don't say this as a good thing, I am, sometimes it's good, but I am very much a, you just gotta push through. Like, you gotta keep going. You don't get paralyzed by the fear. You just keep moving and you'll figure it out, and this is just the way it is. He does not operate that way. And so, you know, all of the stressors that came at us individually and as a couple, he reacted to in a very different way. Okay. He became very focused on his work, his career, what he needed. And I was in this, our son had been born premature. He was in NICU for a week. It was a very stressful, he wasn't eating. Mm-hmm. He had to take appetite stimulant. It was a very just, he was 4 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, it was a very stressful, intense entry into parenthood. Mm-hmm. And my ex-husband really went into that like hyper focus, I'm going to control what I can control. And in many ways, I was in this sort of, there is no control. Like, I am up all night. I'm trying to feed this kid. I'm trying to make sure my career, I was the breadwinner. Mm. My career stays on track. So just very different approaches. His family is very different than mine. So that added some stressors. Mm-hmm. There were very few common threads. And it didn't feel very much at that early, really significant test that we were sort of, we had a common thread and it was like, okay, we're in this 100% together. And so that was the first big one, and we worked past that. We were in therapy for the bulk of our marriage. But over time, what really started crystallizing in my mind was there are some really key behavioral things that I can't, that are painful for me, that don't work for me, and I don't think they work for our family. Mm. And we did go through a lot of therapy, but the behaviors weren't changing. And so I think probably at about the 12-year mark, we really did come to a period where it was like, this is imploding. It was a very difficult time for both of us, but we went back into therapy. We had taken a hiatus. I'm trying to remember exactly like the sequence and condense it all, but we did go back into therapy. We kept at the therapy. But again, that behavior wasn't changing. And then eventually I got to the point where I thought, you know what? I need to go to therapy on my own, because the things that bothered me from the very beginning are still bothering me. Therefore, I don't have a whole lot of faith that they're going to change. Mm. And so I have to figure out how I'm going to deal with all of this. Mm-hmm. And that was a pretty big, I think I knew then that divorce was probably inevitable. I grieved my marriage the end of my marriage while we were still technically married.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Let me just, how are we doing from a sound perspective?
It does kind
of sound like they did. Oh. Yeah.
It's not impeding with...
Can you filter it out in production?
It's not impeding with the dialogue. Dialogue's clear. We can...
suppress
maybe
it.
Maybe not. It's going to be there, so...
Yeah. Okay. You think they'll turn it down anymore or no?
It is pretty loud.
It is loud.
Yeah, they turned it up.
Yeah.
Is it an event or is it just people playing in the?
I think it varies. I don't think it's like a formal event. Yeah. I think sometimes they just cut it up.
Do you want me to go ask? I don't even know.
Is this your space, like in the Lola? Or?
This is a communal
space. Yeah.
And so it just depends on the day and who is here.
Yeah.
You or me.
I'll go. Okay. You're all set
you
up.
You can let them know.
Yeah.
We have like 25-ish minutes if they could give us.
Am I talking too much? Am I not going fast enough?
That's 100% what you as a talent are supposed to do.
Yeah, no, you're good.
Okay. Say, hey, guys.
Right.
So. Is it going?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. It's fantastic.
Yep, we are rolling again whenever you're ready.
So about 12 years in is when you realize this is maybe heading towards divorce.
Yeah.
Talk to us about how it came up.
That's an interesting question because, well, it's a good question. It came up so often. You know, we talked about it in therapy, but then sort of again at that like 12-year mark, excuse me, I think we both sort of started hinting at it. Like there were times where he... And even earlier had said, I'm just going to move out. And I was like, okay, that's a final act, right? but there were definitely, I think we both realized that there were some fundamental flaws in the relationship and in the union. And it came up and then we just kind of both pushed through because I think we were both scared. And we had a kid and, you know, we had a family. And so even if it wasn't the family that I wanted, it was a family and it was the most important thing to me. And so we kind of tiptoed around it. And then, you know, I got to a point at, again, I'm using it just in terms of like years. I don't want to give exact years, but it was, you know, at the 15 year, we had been married for 03. Yeah, we had been married for 15 years. We were trying to figure out, we needed to move and we're trying to figure out where, and it was so problematic and there was so much tension and conflict. There was just, everything was a conflict. And at one point he said, I don't want to keep looking for a house because I feel like it's going to be the end of us. And in my mind, it was, if that's going to be the end of us, then the end is here, right? Because that should not break a marriage, a good marriage. And then a few months later, after we had bought the new house, I just hit an absolute, I cannot do this anymore. At the worst possible time, right? We were in the middle of renovating a brand new house. We were living in another house just in the interim. Our son had just started a new school, but I just hit, and interestingly, I used to always say to him, like, I'm going to hit a limit. I'm going to hit a point of no return where I'm not going to be able to salvage this. I'm just, it's going to be too much. And I hit that point. Mm-hmm. So then I basically said, I can't do this anymore.
And it made it finite this time because you were at that limit.
I was absolutely at that limit. It was deeply impacting my son, the constant conflict. I was exhausted. I have a pretty high energy, pretty high threshold person, but I just was tired of the constant bickering and what felt like a competition of wills all the time, and I hit an absolute point that I could not come back from.
Okay. So you hit that point.
Yeah.
And then you kind of have to gear up for divorce.
Yeah.
What did you need to get in order or learn or do in order to kind of start the divorce process?
So, like I said, I had started individual therapy about a year prior, and one of the things I really needed was the validation that I had tried everything I possibly could try.
Yes.
And that I wasn't just saying, oh, we've hit a bump in the road, I'm out of the car. Like, that was very, very important to me. Mm-hmm. So I needed that just from my therapist and objective third party. But the other thing I really needed from the people who knew me came when I started, frankly, sharing some of the stuff that had been going on in the marriage. And the people who really saw it most were my sister, who I'm very close to, and who obviously knew him longer than I had, and my parents. And I first started with my sister, and when she said, yeah, we've been seeing this, that was another thing that I needed, right? And when I started talking to my closest friends, because I'm pretty just, again, mm-hmm. stiff upper lip, keep going. But when I started talking about it with my closest friends, they were all very much in the, yeah, Tanya, like, duh.
They could all see something that you couldn't see.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what did it feel like to get that validation?
It was very humbling in a lot of ways, because I was like, oh my goodness, these people stuck by me in all of this discomfort that they sat in also, that I didn't even realize they were sitting in. And so in that way, it was very humbling. I felt extremely grateful to have the people who were willing to say, yes, this is not okay, and do what you got to do. You're going to get through it. You're strong. You're going to get through it. That was very, it was very, very, very important. And then there were people who I didn't even know that well who knew what I was going through, because when you do go through divorce, like, it affects every part of your life, mm-hmm. Who were very sort of, who may not have even known my husband, and they basically said, look, you're tough, you're strong, you're smart, the only way out is through, you mm-hmm. just keep going. And so that was, again, very sort of strengthening for me.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I do push through.
Yes, mm-hmm. And okay, I'm not making a rash decision. I'm not making an emotional decision, which is funny considering that I even thought that, considering the fact that we had spent the bulk of our marriage in therapy. But yes, I needed that sort of, yeah, okay, it's mm-hmm. it's okay to call it.
Mm-hmm. That validation of I have tried everything resonates so much with me, and I hope with other listeners. I remember I would call my cousin probably sometimes 3 times a day. I mean, she was my lifeline through yeah. this. And I remember I needed to have a conversation, and she said, Abby, don't you just want to, like, make sure that you've tried everything? And I want to be able to say, yes, I've tried everything. So that just resonates so much.
It does. I mean, I think you have to, for most people, it's the loss of a dream. It's the loss of the future that you planned. Yeah. It's so shattering in every way, you know, and I think it is important for people to hear, yes, you've tried everything.
So on a scale from maybe 1 to 10, 1 being easy peasy, 10 being, you know, the hardest thing, you know, I don't really have a good definition for 10, but 1 through 10, how difficult was your actual divorce process?
Is 2,713 an option?
Oh, absolutely.
It was brutal.
Okay.
It was brutal.
What, if you feel comfortable sharing, what made it brutal?
So a couple of things. One was he did not want the divorce, and he, I think, didn't believe that I would ever reach that limit, and had dismissed it, which was another sort of ironically validating point for me, right? Because I said, I've been telling you I was going to get here for years, and I know myself, I am here. And so that was hard, because I still had a lot of care for this person. I didn't want to hurt him. And I was also sort of, I had a very hard time believing that after everything we've been through and all of the therapy and all of the arguing and the kind of life that we had ended up in, that he would not also say, yeah, you're right. It's not working. So that was really hard. Obviously it was hard for him, but it was very hard for me to see that he really did not think that end was ever going to come. I realized he was not going to ever call it, which I think happens. But then it became very bitter and contentious. I had really hoped that we could just say, look, let's go in these directions. He got to this place where he thought, well, I deserve to live in the life I've gotten accustomed to. So he actually tried to really come after me financially, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So then the lawyers got involved, which typically lawyers get involved, but it was a very bitter, argumentative. I mean, we ended up in mediation we had to have mediation, we had to have arbitration. It was really, really ugly. Mm-hmm. And it lasted a long time.
Yeah.
And that is the, you know, he, I think, was clutching on, and I just wanted it to end so that I could move on, he could move on, and we mm-hmm. could go into our... Mm-hmm. But again, we're very different people yeah. and approach things a very different way.
If I could ask, you wanted it to end. How did you kind of maintain your ground or position? Because when I talk to other people, sometimes the advice is just get it over as fast as you can. Do whatever you need to do. Get to that next chapter. Get to the other side. And when I got that advice, okay, I see there being value in it, but I also don't want to sacrifice my position just to get it over with. So how did you kind of balance?
That's an excellent question. That's a really good question. So I think it's, you know, you didn't have kids. I think when you have a kid, it adds a whole different level of complexity. Mm-hmm. So for me, there were two things that grounded me. One was, what did I have to do to get my kid through this hole? Mm-hmm. And obviously, no matter what I do, it's going to impact him. But what do I need to do to ensure that my son is going to be okay? That was very much of the grounding for me and the guidepost, because I really do believe that even if you have kids, it is so horrible for kids to be surrounded by an unhealthy, toxic relationship. So that was very much, and even my son's therapist, who I had found a couple of years earlier, had said, "You, this is really impacting him, the state of the marriage, not the divorce." That really got me through it and sort of had me focused on pushing through. And the other piece was, and this is a weird thing, and a lot of people sort of recoil from saying this, but it's the truth. Once I knew that there was going to be an end to what I had been struggling with for so long and could not fix on my own, and I knew was not going to get fixed, I really, as hard as it was, and it was brutal in every way, there was a lot of other stuff going on in my life at the same time that was equally hard. I was so aware that the suffering was going to be over that also got me through. So it was a combination of really, first and foremost, my kid, and then second, knowing that suffering, angst, pain was going to come to an end. Mm. Those were the two sort of rudders
yeah.
that I guess kept me moving forward.
Okay.
Does that answer the question?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. What other? Well, you kind of answered. Those were the tools, if you will, the guideposts that got you through it. You had mentioned early on that it became clear your values were different. What value? I think divorce, it does a lot of things, but I think one thing it really does is like crystallize one's values. So what values kind of have now become like almost non-negotiables for you?
Yeah, which is so, and you're right. It does, you know, it puts them into laser focus because you're like, oh my God, these things are so different. And then it helps you realize like these are the absolutes. So values for me, it's very much around loyalty and honesty to family. And I don't mean that in just the, oh, you see each other once a week and ha ha. It's really knowing that you're going to protect each other and you're going to support each other. And that, I don't think we interpret that in the same way. He had had a very good relationship with my parents and my sister. He used to say, I not only, you know, I fell in love with Tanya's family first before I fell in love with Tanya. And that was very important to me. But for some reason, after we moved back from living in France, he became very resentful of my family. And that led to a lot of, frankly, just really painful behavior, mocking, public mocking, which I think is just so disloyal, because you can give your family grief to each other, but you never take that outside, right?
Yeah.
Just a lot of dismissive behavior. What had been a very close relationship between he and my sister really started suffering and going in a very painful direction for her, and she struggled with that, which was odd for me because I was and awkward and really uncomfortable for me because I was like, yeah, I see what you're talking about, but he's my husband.
Yeah.
So
oh, that's tough.
It is. So I think that value was one, and then and everything really centers around that. You know, when you make a commitment and a commitment to marry someone and be with them, part of what you are bringing to this is a commitment to doing and supporting the things that are important to them as well. And that did not exist. So the things in the union for example, I'll just say intimacy, the way our social life, he's very sort of insular and isolated, whereas I love being around people, having people over for dinner, all that stuff. And then, so again, that it's a good question because it's helping me even now crystallize it, that what the way I interpret loyalty and honesty and commitment was just, I think, very different from his.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, because we can use the same words,
correct,
but they might not mean the same thing.
Absolutely.
To different people.
100%. And so I think that was also a big part of it as well. So, you know, I think I just got much earlier to the point where I was like, we're not what the other one needs.
So if you could go back, or not go back, but, you know, you've got this new Tanya who has come through it. She's more resilient, clearer on her values.
Happier.
What would she say to the Tanya who was just in the lowest of lows?
I think I hope this answers your question. One of the hardest things about divorce, especially if you have a kid, is that you realize that there's this thing that didn't work, but in some ways it did work because I have my son. And so my marriage, painful as it was, had to happen because my son had to happen. So I would say the only one thing I would say, but even this I sort of am going to challenge myself on. I have often, you know, I'm very hard on myself. And so the one thing that I have consistently said was, you should have left earlier. How did you allow? You know, there's a lot of humiliation in admitting that you let someone treat you in a way that you should not have let them treat you. And that's a very, for me, it was very humiliating. It's embarrassing. It makes me angry with myself because I'm like, you're smart enough and strong enough and self-aware enough to know that that is not good behavior. But at the same time, you cannot precipitate a divorce. Like, you have to do things when you're ready to do them, especially something like divorce. I mean, I remember crying to my sister, who was my lifeline in every way, just a few years into the marriage, and she would say, what are you going to do? And I would say, I just don't know. Like, I'm not ready. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't. Mm-hmm. So while the emotional side of me says, you should have left that first thing that was really messed up, you should have left then. Things happen as, you know, you have to go through the process.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah. And, you're a different person today than you were.
I am in all of the best ways, mm-hmm. right? I am calmer. I'm happier. I do have a partner who is absolutely unbelievable. He's an amazing father. He's an amazing friend. He's a partner in the way that I need a partner. Mm-hmm. And I'm a partner to him in the way he needs a partner. So you do come through it. You do. Everyone does.
In our last kind of closing question, and it's kind of odd, but what gifts or opportunities did your divorce bring you?
Another great question. My father, when I was in the thick of it, said to me, he said, Tanya, this is an opportunity for you to completely reinvent yourself in every way if you want. And I do think that is a gift that comes from divorce. You really can say, okay, this really is a new life in every way. And I can make it go however I want to make it go. And that has been realizing that and embracing that is scary, but I mean, I'm a lot older than you. So when you get to, you know, I guess I divorced at 47, sort of reinventing yourself and starting from a blank slate at 47 is a lot scarier than it is at, you know, 30, but it's a gift.
I'm 39, by the way.
So still a gift and still a lot younger. Yes. Yeah.
No, someone else said to me, you have a second chance at life.
You do.
And that didn't even like enter my brain until they said that to me. And I was like, oh my gosh, I do have a second chance. Yeah.
You do. You have a second chance at everything. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
This is going to be one of my favorite episodes. I just know it. I feel it in my gut. So
thank you. Well, it's super fun. I hope it helps people.
Yeah, me too. That's the intent. I think there's two things. People will either realize I'm not alone in this, or a level of gratitude that maybe the story they hear is, you know, on that scale from 1 to 10, maybe that story is a 9 or a 10, and they realize, hey, my situation is maybe a 5 or a 6 compared to this, and maybe there's a sense of gratitude with it.
Yeah.
But, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.